I have known Paul Keating for 40 years. I was first introduced to him in the non-members bar of the old Parliament House when he was a hungry young backbencher in the Whitlam opposition in 1975. And I suppose I was a hungry young journalist working for an ABC program called This Day Tonight. I met him again the day he became Gough Whitlam's youngest and last ministerial appointment, 3 weeks before the dismissal. He already had the swagger and an eye for a good suit, and he had future leader written all over him. I saw Keating at work inside the political system when I was press secretary to Whitlam in his final stint as opposition leader in 1977 and to deputy leader Lionel Bowen until 1980. Keating was constantly in and out of both offices, and his influence and stature growing by the month. I watched him cut his teeth as a brash young parliamentarian. I was also exposed as much to the views of his enemies as his friends, and heard all the criticisms as well as the accolades. Over the decades of watching politics closely, and after countless television interviews with Paul Keating, many of them tense, we have developed what might be described as a relaxed professional relationship rather than a friendship, within which he's never stopped being a political animal, and I've never stopped being a journalist. It's a lonely business, politics. Friendships between politicians aren't impossible and can be deep, but most seem to have a limited life. Very few endure. Journalists, on the other hand, are so endlessly fascinated by power that they wouldn't know whether a relationship with a politician is friendship or just a reflection of that fascination mixed with varying degrees of respect and mutual self-interest. When we were negotiating the ABC television series, apart from a request for minimal intrusion on his family life, Keating's only caveat was that the conversations be more discursive than the combative style of the usual 7:30 political interviews, which was what I'd intended anyway. "You can still be the tiger," he said, "and I'll be the tamer." When we recorded the conversations for the series, my focus was so centred on the challenge at hand that I dismissed all thought of extending the material into a book. Besides, there were already three biographies, Don Watson's Prime Ministerial Portrait and various other credible accounts of Keating's time as Treasurer and Prime Minister. What ultimately drew me to this exercise, apart from the overwhelming response the series created, was that our 16 hours of conversation left me with as many questions as they gave me answers. Powerful medium though it is, the limitations of television and the tyranny of the ticking clock meant that after the extensive edit, many topics were touched on but not exhausted, and others were not even raised. For instance, media policy has always been one of the great Labour obsessions, and no one was more obsessed than Paul Keating. But I felt that if we didn't have the time to tackle that topic properly, then we shouldn't waste precious time on it at all. I was particularly frustrated, and I know Keating was too, by the impossible task of doing justice to the policies and politics of 4 1/4 years of the Prime Ministership in 1 hour. Looking back, 20 years after it all ended, I was surprised how much ground there was to cover and how much was left unanalysed. We are never going to get an autobiography from Paul Keating, which is pretty extraordinary given his impact on modern Australia. He's been consistent in saying that for many years. Yet it's clear he cares about his place in history, which was his incentive in cooperating with the television series and now the book. At the same time, I could see as we travelled through the years that reliving the times is surprisingly painful for him, a tacit acknowledgement that even the most successful political lives do come at a cost. Probably the more successful, the bigger the cost. Keating's regret and frustration over the relationship with Bob Hawke is particularly palpable. That such a productive partnership could end so bitterly, and he and Hawke will never agree now on why it failed. On the one hand, Keating wants the strength of the relationship and its legacy to be properly understood. On the other, you get the sense he'll never come to terms with his own bitterness over its ultimate collapse. In the same way, he still seethes at his recollections of the schism between he and his office and the Labour Party's campaign office during the 1966 election campaign. He will never accept that party officials might be smarter on campaign strategy than a leader who had been making sharp policy judgments daily and political judgments for 13 years. And is particularly angry that they didn't give him even a sliver of a chance of beating John Howard. It says something about the intensity and complexity of the man that he still can't let go all these years later. I've read a lot of biographies over many years, some of which have been superb, but often you emerge with a sense that the authentic voice of the subject is leached out to varying degrees in the filtering process. David Marr's biography of Patrick White was one wonderful exception, not least because Marr had the great good sense to let White's own voice come through from his copious letters. With a political autobiography, you might get the authentic voice of the politician, but the self-serving side of the enterprise will not be tempered by the challenge of an honest broker that you might hopefully get from a biographer. I am neither Paul Keating's biographer nor his ghostwriter, and I'm not aware there's been an exercise quite like this before. What I think and hope has emerged from this book is an amalgam of the two, that along with Keating's authentic voice in a series of freewheeling conversations are some robust challenges to his account of the political history he lived through and his part in it, and that readers get enough of both to make up their own minds about what this notable political life represents. In shaping these conversations, I've drawn on many thousands of pages of Keating biographies in those other excellent accounts of the political times in which he lived, including biographies of other politicians, autobiographies, memoirs, political diaries, and other works of political history, including Paul Kelly's seminal work. On thousands of newspaper articles collected week by week through Keating's career, many unflattering to him. Hundreds of pages of interviews recorded with all the key Hawke cabinet ministers for the ABC's groundbreaking Labour in Power series. Cabinet documents and Keating's own extensive notes of milestone meetings such as the Mabo negotiations, providing further intimate insights to history. I found Keating's digitised newspaper archive fascinating to flick through because even allowing for imperfections within stories, the patterns that emerged from issue to issue, from event to event, as recounted or analysed by five or six different reporters or commentators, were often very revealing of the times. And then there were the insights from his comments in the margins. As well as the 16 hours of conversations for the ABC series, I recorded a further 16 hours in a series of sessions in Keating's Potts Point, Sydney office over 18 months. Many of the questions were less about the detail of policies than about getting a true sense of how he functioned, how he related to others, how he won his big reform battles, how he regrouped after the losses, and his methods as he came to dominate both his party and the Parliament. But within the framework of Keating's account of those times, what I really wanted to do was provide an intimate study of leadership wrapped in a powerful and complex personality, including, as Patrick White so nicely put it, the flaws in the glass.